From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Megan Mack. Our connection this hour was made at the 2016 Libertarian Party National Convention. It was widely assumed that Gary Johnson was once again going to be the Libertarian Party candidate for president. The question was who would join him on the ticket. A group of libertarians debated, vying for the vice presidential slot. Some of the loudest cheers came for a New Yorker, a man named Larry Sharp. In the end, Sharp finished second, earning 47% of the vote. Former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld became the nominee. But Larry Sharp isn't done with politics. Now he's running for governor of New York, and he believes he's found the right moment to help grow the ideas and the mission of the Libertarian Party. Sharp is a veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps. He's a former teacher. He's been a business owner and a manager. And his most recent business work sees him serving as managing director of the NeoSage Group, an online business trading company. Larry Sharp is back in Rochester, and he's our guest for the hour. Larry, welcome back to the program.
Yes, I'm glad to be back. You are right. I have the answers. Thank you.
We'll have a chance to work through a number of issues and Larry's platform this hour. But first, I know you made a special trip up here to Rochester for the show. We are honored. Thank you very much for being here.
I came early because of you. I have a rally tomorrow at the old German house in Rochester at 2 o'clock tomorrow, but I didn't come up just for that. I came up early for you.
That's so nice. And you're here for the next couple weeks, is that correct?
I'm here for about a week and a half.
A week and a half,
About a week and a half, yep.
So tomorrow at the German House on Gregory Street, it's a rally for a hashtag New New York.
It is.
That's from 2 to 4. And then you and Andrew Hollister will be meeting with voters in Fairport on Thursday. Tell us a little bit about that event.
That is correct, yes. Andrew Hollister is my, he's my lieutenant governor. He's someone I trust tremendously, and I supported him when he was running for city council here in Rochester. He's actually born and raised in Rochester.
Yes. So he's been a guest on this program.
Absolutely. So yes, he is someone I trust and love and respect, and he's going to make an amazing lieutenant governor and maybe governor one day, even better. So, yes, we go all over the place. We're trying to cover the entire state. I do about 30 events, if not more, every single month. And so I know that I'm really the only guy out there who's actually trying to go out and meet people. I don't travel with a huge entourage, just one or two people. And when I get there, it's no rules. We just talk and I answer questions.
And Larry has assured me there are no questions that are off the table. So listeners,
That's
if you have questions for him, you can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. That's 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. You can email the program at connections@WXXI.org. And you can find me on Twitter at MMacMedia. And Larry, where can we find you on Twitter?
Larry Sharp. Very simple.
Sharp with
Larry
an E.
Sharp. Sharp with an E, and the E stands for electable. Yes, it does. E makes it special. Stands for electable. Absolutely. If you want to go to the Facebook page, it is Larry Sharp for New York. And, of course, also the YouTube page, Larry Sharp for New York, and the website, LarrySharp.com.
And we'll have links on our podcast page as well, listeners. But Larry is here on the heels of last night's primary with Governor Cuomo, easily defeating Cynthia Nixon in about a 2-to-1 margin. And after taking a look at the winners from last night's ballot, Kathy Hochul, Tish James, we're seeing the establishment striking back, as many news outlets are saying. Analysts from our election coverage here at WXXI last night said that one lesson from the primary is that the establishment won't be caught sleeping amidst a rise of progressive voices. Larry, what are some of your thoughts about the results of the primary?
Yeah, it's not that the establishment is doing so well. It's that His Majesty Governor Cuomo runs the party with an iron fist. That's really the issue. The issue is he runs the party with an iron fist. Since 2016, the establishment has been losing and continues to lose. Every once in a while, there is some pushback, absolutely. But as a general rule, you got to remember, this is a primary. So who votes? Hardcore Democrats. 70% of New Yorkers don't vote. 70%. That's the non-establishment. A primary, by default, is the establishment. So, of course, the establishment strikes back in a primary, right? That's why, you know, Hillary Clinton beat Bernie, right? I mean, the reality of it is, when it comes to the general election, non-establishment tends to win. That's a tendency. It tends to happen. So I have a feeling it's going to happen again this time. And to be forward with you, completely unbiased, I'm the only non-establishment candidate there is out there. So I do think there was some fear, though. And the issue is, and I have some friends who – my district is – Alexandria Ocasio-Castro's district.
Cortez,
I'm sorry. Her district, Cortez, yes. And so the people who I know who are Democrats, and most of my friends are in Queens, many of them voted for her, but then voted for Cuomo. And it was people around them who said, well, is she really, you know, does she really have experience? But no one asked that question when it was for Alexandria. No one asked that question. My gut tells me it might have actually been the debate.
Okay.
It might have been the debate. The debate actually showed what happened, because after AOC, as I'll call her, as she's often called, after AOC won and people started asking her tough questions, a lot of people began to walk away. They began to back off from her, thinking maybe she doesn't have the experience that we thought. Maybe it's not enough. So that might have been part of it, I think. But I think when it comes to the actual election, non-establishment still is going to have a better chance of victory, because the people who usually don't vote will begin to show up. And when they show up, they tend to not want establishment. If they want an establishment, they would vote regularly.
Some of the criticism we've been hearing about Cynthia Nixon just from upstate voters is that she was not in touch with upstate. She made a trip up here, I think, after she heard some of that criticism. She was a guest on this program for about 20 minutes. But Larry, if you're looking at upstate New York, mm-hmm. for all of our listeners here and beyond, what are some of your concerns or priorities? How will you serve the people of upstate, especially being someone from downstate?
It is a wonderful question. The first thing I did, which I hope people see, is I actually picked a running mate from upstate. That's the first thing I did, right? So realizing that my entire campaign is about not allowing one city to run the entire state, whether that city is Albany or that city is New York City. We, as a libertarian, I always say, I want people to be as liberal or as conservative as they want to be. You should be who you want to be. You shouldn't just, no one else should be pushing their views upon you, and you shouldn't be pushing your views upon others with force. It's not the right answer. So I want counties to be counties and regions to be regions, as they should. So the reason why so many people upstate say, I don't like downstate, or New York does all these bad things, New York City is this bad place, is because they feel like New York City is controlling a lot of the state. And they're right. So how about instead, if I just let you be you and me be me, then we can all be happy together. So how will I help upstate? Number one, I will stop unfunded mandates. I will stop the individual counties up here who don't want to pay for and deal with things that Albany says is the right answer. Stop that. They can start their budgets at zero. And they can change their counties the way they want to change their counties. That's number one. But the second thing is I want to support farmers. Farmers are ignored in New York City because there aren't that many of them. It's very few farmers in New York City. And there are a couple, but very few. There's massive farmers upstate, tons of farmers upstate. Why aren't we treating farmers, particularly small farmers, like small businesses? And I mean that in every way, so that they can get better loans, better insurance rates, better workers' comp. Nothing but save, save, save. In addition, in Wyoming, there's a law right now that says if you are a local farmer and you agree to sell your goods only locally, you're immune from federal regulatory bodies. Why don't we copy that here in New York State? Let the local farmer decide to, if they want to just do farm to table or just sell locally, to be able to compete better with the bigger farmers. One, by treating it like a small business for loans and for insurance purposes. And two, by not having to worry about federal regulatory bodies, which large farmers almost always sell across state borders. Small don't, right? But I'll add one more thing else. Why aren't we legalizing both hemp and cannabis? Why aren't we allowing our farmers to grow? And when I say regulate hemp and cannabis, I mean like onions. Just like onions. You can grow onions, you can grow hemp, and you can grow cannabis. Tomorrow, grow. But you combine that with the business side, and now we allow the farm to literally get a loan so they can start a small plant on their farm to create specialized crops. So you can create a specialized product for cannabis, specialized hemp, hempcrete, or maybe hemp cloth, or hemp rope, or whatever the case may be. How do I know that will happen? It's already been happening in New York State with breweries. Look at the beer industry throughout the entire state. You have a bunch of, you know, local breweries and craft beers. And why aren't we having craft crops and craft grows and craft everything else? New York State would explode. The idea of New York State competing very well and effectively with the mass growths out in California now, they have years ahead of us. We're probably not going to be able to compete with that. But can we compete at the craft level? Yes, we can, and we need to, and we should. That would also help, by the way, dairy farmers. Dairy farmers being crushed by the idea of being price takers versus price makers. They now can create, you know, craft yogurt products and cheeses and ice cream and insert thing here. So they can also do that. So you start adding that, you start supporting the local farmers, you'll see a growth. But not just that. No more bribing big business to come to New York State. And it's always been the answer. Bribe big business. So I bring big business into a small town or into a city upstate New York, and I give them a bunch of bribes. They show up. They already are big, so they already can compete better with the small businesses. Now I've given them $10, $20, $30 million in bribes so they can compete even better. They crush all the small businesses. Any value we may have gotten from them, we lose because of the bribes. Then the bribes go away. They leave. Ghost town. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. Tired of that. No more. Support small businesses. Support local farms. Support New Yorkers. Let them grow. Bring people back to our state. I'll add one more side. New York State is very good at crushing anything new. We love old money, old money, old money. We've pushed out, as I mentioned, hemp and cannabis. We pushed out Bitcoin, blockchain. We're trying to get rid of Uber and trying to get rid of Airbnb. All mistakes. Embrace the new economy. Embrace new ideas. Bring the youth back to our state. We have youth flight. If you lived in New York more than 20 years, you know someone young who's left. They get educated and they leave, or they get educated someplace else and never come back. Nothing but bad. It is our environment is so bad in New York State that we are literally destroying families. And if you are a Democrat now, well, you've been in charge for 16 years. It's your fault. If you're a Republican now, you've done nothing for 16 years. It's your fault. Now, if you're also a Democrat for the future, the answer is, well, we hate Trump, therefore we're good, ignoring all the plight of New Yorkers. If you're a Republican, you go, well, what can we do? Woe is us. We can't do anything. Shame on you Democrats. Shame on you Republicans. If this year you do the same thing you've been doing, which is vote red or blue, here's what I guarantee you. Blue will win. Red will come in second. Nothing will change. But if you actually decide to make a change this year and vote gold, yes, that's me, gold libertarian, you vote libertarian in a gubernatorial race this year, I guarantee you, you will have change. Because one of three things will happen. One, I'll win. And if I win, I will change this state overnight. You will see a change in the environment. You will see a change in the nation. You will see people understand that a third party can actually win. You will actually make things change. In this state overnight. Government will change from being, I am going to, you know, enforce my will because elections have consequences, and will shift instead to, I am the guy who will protect you from the local bullies which constantly pop up. I'll protect your rights, and we will care about the individual more, and you will watch all of us grow. But maybe I come in second, beat the Republican. Maybe that's what happens. That could happen. If that happens, guess what? The Republican Party, all you Republicans out there, your party elite that is completely corrupt and horrible will be crushed overnight. And the average Republican voter who actually wants something to be done can get back in charge of their own party. Your party is so broken, they foisted some guy from downstate on you, didn't give you a primary, and tell you shut up and vote, and no one else has a chance. And they've been telling you this lie for 16 years, and you've been losing for 16 years, and you think this is the year? How naive are you? When are you as a voter going to stop doing that? And if you're a Democrat, you go, oh my God, I've lost my lapdogs. And the Democrats who've been running roughshod over this state will all of a sudden go, wait a minute, maybe we should be a better party too. But maybe I just come in third, a tight third. Guess what happens? Every single reporter out there shoves a microphone in my face for the next 2 years. Larry, how'd you do it? How'd you do so well? How'd you come so close? When that happens, all the ideas I talk about, the bold new ideas of raising money through ways other than taxation, of completely revamping our education system, of fixing our family court system, of legalizing hemp and cannabis, of supporting our small farmers, all those ideas stay. And if the ideas stay, the state changes and we'll be better. No matter what, you vote gold, we win.
Well, this hour, we will be talking about those education ideas. I want to talk more about big business, because in this Rust Belt city, we have a lot of concerns about the future of our economy. There's a lot more on the list. But since you've brought up media attention, I want to ask you about Reason Magazine. They published a piece in June titled, Why the Hell Isn't Larry Sharp Being Pulled in New York? I'm sure you've seen that.
Meanwhile, Reason Magazine won't bother mentioning me.
Well, they mentioned you because you had your own polling done. So it said at least a quarter of New Yorkers would tell you that they won't vote Democrat or Republican if only pollsters would ask them.
Yep.
Why are you not listed on these gubernatorial polls?
Yeah, all the time. We actually asked. Actually, there was a company that actually went out there. I think it was NewsGrowl who went out there and actually looked and asked. And they were very open. They said, well, we don't do it because, you know, the people who sponsor us don't like it. They literally said that. I mean, they literally said the people who sponsor us don't like it. They know that I'm on the ballot. I am literally on the ballot. I'm a viable candidate. I am on the ballot. I jumped through all the hoops required, and they still won't put me on. Here's the reality of it. I've been in two polls, a Quinnipiac poll and a Gravis marketing poll. And in both of those polls, one thing's the same. Of the people who know me, I poll at over 25%. That's embarrassing to everybody else. Why in the world would they want to show that? I came out of nowhere. I'm a libertarian in New York State. And the people who know me, 25% want to vote for me. which means my problem is, of course, name recognition. So if they get my name out, I will poll at 25%. This is a five-way race. And in New York's plurality state, 30% could win this thing. I'm 5 points from victory if people know who I am in two separate polls. The issue is they don't know who I am. The other common thing is my name recognition is only about 25%, give or take, which is far too low to win the election, right? So if I get my name out there, I could actually win. And they know that.
So you're saying it's rigged?
Of course it's rigged. Let me be very clear. Of course it's rigged. That's not even close. I am a viable legal candidate, and I can't get good press. That's why I have to use, as you've seen, I use niche media all the time. I use social media, I use niche media, and I'm still getting out there. I am advancing in spite of them, so that when I actually win, now they should be afraid. They better get on my good side now, because if I win and I'm governor, oh my God, they're gonna look really bad. They looked really bad when Trump won. They looked really bad when Trump won. The pollsters got hammered, and the media right now still has that backlash. Trump is able to call them fake news, and they still pay the price because they were so wrong and so off in 2016. They're doing it again. They've learned nothing. Well, you have, thank you. You guys have had me on more than once, so thank you so much.
You're welcome.
But many of your comrades in the media world have learned nothing, and when I do well and or win, they're going to look stupid again. And it is going to help crush the media and make people trust them even less. It is only to their detriment to ignore me. Only to them.
Well, I will say, listeners, we are offering equal time to all of the gubernatorial candidates. Cynthia Nixon was on this program last month. There's an open invitation to Governor Cuomo if he decides to join us. And we did speak with Stephanie Miner before she decided to run. We'll be inviting her back now that she has made that commitment. Mark Molinaro will be on this program. And Howie Hawkins has been... Mark Molinaro?
Who's he?
He's cheeky, Larry Sharp. And also Howie Hawkins has been on this program. So if you have not heard those conversations and you would like to, you can find those on our podcast, and that's where you can find this conversation with Larry as well. But I want to move on to some personal stuff, Larry,
please.
Because I had an opportunity to watch a video on your website. Just talking about your personal background, I think it's fair to say that some of your preferred policies are informed by personal experience. This is not something I was aware of before before watching the video, but you had a tough childhood. Mm-hmm. You had a tough time and some difficult things happening in your adulthood as well. Tell us a little bit about how your life has informed some of your policies.
Well, many things. One, I lost my father when I was young. I was 11, 12 years old when he passed away. And my mother and I really couldn't handle that very well at all. I ran off to the Marine Corps at 17. And she actually became addicted to legal drugs and eventually illegal drugs and was a victim of the drug war. So I have seen the prison industrial complex both from the side of the state, meaning my father was a corrections officer, and I saw it from someone who was a victim of it. My mother was a victim of the drug war. So I've seen both. And I respect both sides. I'm the only candidate right now who wants real criminal justice reform on both sides. I want to include the corrections officers. I want to include the system and to fix the system. You find two sides, generally speaking. You find side one that says every corrections officer is a thug and every person in jail is a victim. That's not true. That's completely false. Or you find the opposite. Every corrections officer is a saint and law enforcement is perfect and every person in jail is an evil person and should be killed. Neither of those things is true. And with that thought process, nothing gets done. And right now, because Democrats are in charge, we're basically punishing law enforcement right now, right? And helping out people in jail en masse, not just finding the people who should be helped, but you know, blanket pardons and things of that sort, which are terrible. These ideas are bad. What if Republicans get in charge, the reverse might happen. I just go, oh, law enforcement's perfect, and let's punish everybody and double down on everything bad. It's not the right answer. The answer is getting both the corrections officers and the family and loved ones of inmates together to find the right solution. And there is one. We already have it. We have it right now in Massachusetts. It's called the Humvee program. It's a program where COs help to select the people who come into the facility. And the facility is a separate area within the prison in a certain community. In this case, it's veterans. And then volunteers come in. They're former veterans. They're vets who are former convicts who can come in and help. And over the course of time, they find the right way. It's like a separations program. It allows people to actually get a second chance at life. And because of what happened to my mom, I want people to have a second chance at life. My mom was clean the rest of her life until she died. She never went back. But she struggled to have a second chance. And the only way that I could get her to have a second chance was through entrepreneurship, which is another reason why I support small business. I'm a small business owner. And then to get my mom into a world where she wasn't the hostage of the person who employed her, where she wasn't basically afraid to lose any job because of her record, she had to become an entrepreneur. Well, that was good for me and for her, but there's a lot of people who can't do that. It's just not in their DNA, or they don't have the support system to do that. I luckily had that, and that skill set and that support system. I could do that. My mom had a situation. Others can't. So I want to support people. The Humvee program, in Massachusetts, the recidivism rate is about 75%. For that program, it's less than 5. Huge issue. And it brings CEOs involved. They help select, they help guide, they help control, while volunteers who care most about the actual people and loved ones, they're able to actually guide and put them into a road to where someone gets an actual second chance. I'm a big fan proponent of second chances. America was a country of second chances. That's why people came here. They were failing in Europe and they came. They were failing in Asia and they came here for a second chance at life. And we should be about that.
More often than not, the Libertarian Party supports allowing women access to abortion. So on your website, you say the party is known as the pro-choice party on every issue and that abortion should be a family issue, not a government issue. But your personal views are a little different.
That's correct. Yes.
Tell us about that.
Absolutely. Now, people say, Larry, are you pro-life? And many people think I am pro-life. I call myself anti-abortion. Why do I say that? Because if you call yourself pro-life, that means that you want the government to stop women from having abortions. I don't. I will not use force. And I won't use force. I am anti-abortion. I don't want women to have abortions. I don't. I do not want women to have abortions. And I say it openly. I have no problem saying that. I believe they should not have abortions. With that in mind, it's not my right to stop you. I can't stop you. I can tell you, please don't do it. I have a freedom of speech. And I should. And I do. Please don't. But if you want to, I should not be able to, and I can't. And on top of it, people who are pro-life get mad at me and say, but we've got to stop it. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. How do I know that? In Ireland. Ireland just said, we give up. What winds up happening when government restricts abortion, here's what happens every single time. Two-tiered system. The wealthy go get them anyway, and the poor back alley and death for women. So you just you wind up punishing poor women. I'm not about punishing poor women. That's a bad idea. I don't ever want to do that, ever. So how about instead I say, you know what? If you want to have an abortion, you may. It's your right. Go do so. Yes, you may. With that in mind, please don't. And let me, as governor, do what I can to make other options as open as I possibly can. Now, I'm adopted also. You said that my birth mother could have aborted me and didn't. I was adopted. And I was very lucky that I was adopted as a baby. So what am I going to do? Make adoption a whole lot easier. Make surrogacy a whole lot easier. Absolutely. I would like women. Some women want to get an abortion and will get one no matter what I do. I accept that as true. No worries. But there are women out there who think it's their best or only option. It's not. There are other options out there. And if you're one of those women and you're like, I don't know, I want to say adoption's here and easy to do, please. Surrogacy is here and easy, please. There are people here who are willing to pay for all your medical bills, to take you all the way to term and to take care of your baby. There are people who will do it. And we should allow that to happen. I do not believe we should stop it. So am I pro-choice? Yes. Am I anti-abortion? Yes. I am both.
What do your conversations look like with people on both sides of the issue? Do you find that we just had a conversation last hour about when people feel impassioned with something, they get so caught up in their own emotions, they don't sometimes look at evidence, they don't see facts or they don't listen to other viewpoints. How are your conversations with people on both sides of the issue, with you having a different perspective?
Yep,
what do those look like?
Generally speaking, they're good because if you've heard me speak already, and what I say all the time is I never just talk about facts. I talk about emotion and facts because humans are both emotional and logical. So I said, it doesn't work and I don't want to hurt poor women because I'm emotional. I understand that, right? You were right. You said, does my past affect my policy? It does, right? My mom was a poor woman. Right, I don't want to punish poor women at all. And I have a personal issue. I don't like abortion. So I have to find an answer that doesn't punish poor women and makes less abortions. So if you're pro-choice, I'm not going to stop and take away your right. You're going to still have it. The state will still be pro-choice. But if you're pro-life, you have two choices if you're pro-life. One, you can feel righteous and vote for a Republican who will do nothing to stop abortions in New York State at all, not one single thing whatsoever. He or she, or in this case, he, will pander to you and say how much they care and do nothing. Or you can vote for me. someone who will allow the left to still have abortions. However, promise you, there will be less abortions in New York State while I'm governor, because I'll provide other options for women who are looking to have another option. I will make it easier to not have an abortion.
What will you do?
As I said, I will make adoption and I'll make surrogacy a whole lot easier. And I will speak about it like this right now. I will tell you, there are other options. I won't just say, which is what most Republicans say, well, you know, it's settled law. Move on. It's settled law. I won't do that. That's how. I'm about changing culture, not law.
Well, let's talk about health care. So Democrats are touting a form of single-payer health care that they're calling Medicare for All.
Ooh.
You have criticized that, saying it's more likely to look like VA for All.
It is. And the VA is a disaster and embarrassment. I'm a vet. I don't have a problem saying that. Don't get me wrong. There are a couple of VA hospitals that do a good job. There are. And I don't want to put down every VA hospital. There are some VA hospitals that do a pretty good job. The vast majority don't. And the system itself, even though there may be a good hospital within the system itself is an embarrassment and disaster and should go away. The VA should just be an insurance company. That's about it. It should just go away. The system's a terrible system. So yes, it will become VA for All. Here's the problem. When you create a healthcare system that is socialized like that, you create a two-tiered system again. It's a two-tiered system thing. How do I know? It's happening already in Manhattan right now. In Manhattan, most of the best doctors don't take insurance. And you know this, everyone who works there knows that to be true. What happens? So if you go to a doctor's office that takes insurance, you will find two doctors and five administrators. And the five administrators are more concerned about photocopying your information than you. Your waiting room is a horrible waiting room. Your appointment's at 2 o'clock. You get seen at 3:45. Why? Because you're in the way. You're not the customer. Either Medicaid, Medicare is the customer, or insurance company is the customer. Their system is set up to make them happy, not to make you happy because you're in the way. When you're seen, you talk to for maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and it always ends the same way. Either a prescription or a procedure, because that's how they get paid. Because they can now bill Medicaid, bill insurance company, bill whatever the case may be, right? That's what it is. A system set up for that. You do VA for All, everybody gets that except for the rich or the wealthy. How do I know that? Because I'm an entrepreneur. I pay for my own insurance. I go to the insurance doctors and my wife refuses to. She will only go to the best doctors in Manhattan. So I pay out of pocket there, right? So I have a two-tier system within my own home. So we go to Manhattan. What do you have? Five doctors, two administrators. The reverse. No more admin issues. You woke up. It's, hi, Mrs. Sharp. How are you? Come on in. Have a seat. It's a lovely room. It's great. Your appointment's at 2. You get seen latest 2:05. Your doctor talks to you for 20 minutes or half an hour. Ask you important questions about your life, like how's your stress level? How are you eating? How's your exercise? What's going on in your life that might make you feel this, feel that? And then guess what it ends with? Whatever is going to be good for you, because you're swiping your credit card or giving them a check, because you are the customer. The goal of any healthcare system, and here's the issue, is not healthcare insurance. And this is the problem. The Democrats are focusing on the wrong issue. In this nation, we have confused health care with health care insurance. I want to change the health care system. The current health care system is a cartel system that is completely broken, which is why we have a bad health care insurance system. I actually don't want to change health care insurance right now at all. What I want to do instead is fix the health care system. And the keys to this entire piece is transparency. Transparency is everything. If we change that system, it will break the cartel system. Right now, it's literally people in a room saying, how much do you think we should pay for that aspirin? I don't know. Well, let's charge them $100. What do you think? $100? Yeah, it's fine. Boom, $100. And if you've gone to a hospital, you see the list, aspirin, $75, $100. Literally, we all know it doesn't cost that. It is literally price fixing. And in healthcare, that's somehow legal. It should not be. This is a system now that, and I bring this up often. You get a new job, and you need to get a new wardrobe for your job. You come to my clothing store. You say, Larry, Larry Clothing, give me some new clothes. I go, great. I set you up with some different clothes, maybe some shoes, all kind of cool, maybe a jacket, something cool. Love it. We both agree. This is perfect for your new job. Awesome. Great. And you go, Larry, how much? And I say, I don't know. What do you mean? It's your store. It is my store. Well, this stuff's perfect for me. It is perfect for you. How much does it cost? I don't know. What do you mean you don't know? Here's what we're going to do. Take it, go home, and what's going to happen is you're going to get a bill in the mail in a couple weeks, and whatever that bill is, you got to pay. If you don't pay, you're in trouble. That is our current healthcare system.
So what would you do differently? If you were to start from scratch, what would your plan look like?
Well, I don't have to start from scratch. There's a very simple plan to trade with. It's actually very simple. Let people know that within X period of time, I'm thinking 6 months, but to be full with you, this is a lot of discussions before I do this, but I'm thinking 6 months, that everything in New York State, healthcare or not, must be treated like any other retail system. It must be transparent. Period. That's it. Once that happens, and I'm saying that's going to be the issue, if we can pass that as true regulation, right? That's what it is. We make that happen. Just the same as everything else. No special rules for medical, just everything else. You will see everyone begin to scramble. And that's what I want. When people begin to scramble, figure out how do we make this happen, you'll start seeing other things pop up. How do I know this? It's already happening. And I'll give you three good examples. The first one is there are people right now in Oklahoma, I think it's called the Oklahoma Surgery Center, which literally lists all of its prices. You can see it. Somehow they're making money, people are happy, and it's cheaper than every other hospital. It's working already. You have other doctors right now who are picking, doctors groups, who are picking what I call the Costco model, which is everyone pays a flat fee per month. Come to the hospital whenever you want, it's $5. Come to the doctor's office whenever you want, it's $5. They tried this for free. It didn't work because the seniors came every day to hang out with their buddies. So they had to charge them something. Charge them $5. And what's happening is people are now starting to be able to get better service and it works better. How do I know that will work? The last thing, you look at any non-required medical like LASIK eye surgery, cosmetic dentistry, anything like that. And what do you find? Prices go down, service goes up, technology goes up. We begin to break that. You will see new things begin to happen. When that begins to happen, prices will come down. And when prices come down, we now can revamp insurance. Because what it should be, several things. Number one, it should be a situation to where insurance isn't that expensive. And you, in fact, day-to-day isn't that expensive. And you can actually instead begin to have it to where you have catastrophic insurance instead. Now, people have said, but Larry, people don't often know what it's going to cost. You don't know when you diagnose your car either. But they've had a system for that too. You get an estimate, you figure it out, you talk to the person about it, you figure it out, you find the right answers. Can it happen? Of course it will. Insurance companies aren't gonna just walk out of New York and say, we don't want this 18 million person, you know, situation. Not. But also in fixing the healthcare system, we have a system that's controlled by the government. We have things like certificates of need. I can't put a hospital or facility in a place until the government says yes. Why in the world do we have that? That is not working. It's from a bygone era. It's dumb, shouldn't exist. My rule on that will be, unless you're using eminent domain, yes. I don't care where you want to put it. But Larry, what will happen? Good stuff. Again, how do I know? Cosmetic dentistry, LASIK eye surgery. They show up where they want to show up and somehow it's all working. And it can still work. It will still work. You also draw the right people to the right places, which will also happen naturally. Again, how do I know that? It's happening already. You can see it happening already. We are behind the power curve here completely. Lastly, we fix it to where if you want to actually, with the education system, if you want to actually start and get into the medical field, you can get in earlier and get in easier. Because not only do we have a lack of facilities, we also have a lack of doctors and nurses. So we make that easier to get into the field in the first place, right? To be under a doctor, under a nurse, to be in a hospital, in a facility earlier, to be learning. But Larry, how will that work? We know it already worked. How do we know? Vietnam showed us this. All the medics from Vietnam. This has already worked. I'm not making things up that haven't worked before. They've already worked. Fear is stopping us.
Well, we've got a listener on the line who wants to push back a little on your criticism of Medicare for All. So this is Tony in Geneseo. Go ahead, Tony.
Hello. Number one, your guest is wrong. All doctors, well, not all doctors, but many, many doctors, almost all surgeons and all hospitals take insurance in New York City. So if you go to the doctor's office, perhaps you're not going to take insurance. But when you have a major issue at hand, of course they're going to take insurance. There's no way that a person could pay out of pocket for that. Maybe 0.1%. And the second thing, perhaps your guest is right for LASIK surgery, but this isn't a retail model. When you go to a physician and they say, it's do this or your life, you have no option. You can't walk away. So you can't apply those simple, let me say simplistic models to this system. Now, my son, okay, was in...
Hold on, can I answer you? Can I answer that, please?
Let me finish for a second. My
son, I thought you wanted me, I wanted to answer the first piece.
Let me finish, and then you can talk, and I'll take your response off the air, okay? You know, he goes to his doctor, just like everyone else with an insurance company, okay? If he had some catastrophic thing, he would be able to get assistance. He would be able to get any kind of medical care that he needed, pretty much, but not selective medical care, like you're giving as an example, like LASIK or cosmetic surgery. Those are selective things. And so I'm willing to listen to what you have to say, but I'm done talking. You can go back and say what you wanted to say. But you were wrong about insurance.
You can stay on if you want. I don't mind at all. Let me give you a certain thing. You've actually just made my entire argument. You said, with the current system, it's so bad. With the current system, it's so bad. That's my point. I want to break the current system. The fact that someone says, get this or die, that right there is bad. The fact that everyone who is trying to get major surgery has to take insurance is also bad. To say that doesn't work, go to Oklahoma. It is working. They're doing major surgeries with no insurance at prices that the average Oklahoman can actually pay, and they're making money. So your idea that can't work is incorrect. It can work.
I didn't say that that the system's not working. What I'm saying is that your model as a retail thing won't work.
And I'm telling you it is working.
Medicare and Medicaid have set prices for procedures.
Yes.
And that's exactly what you need. Because if you have, let's say, a life-threatening heart surgery that you need, Medicare is going to pay a fixed price for that. And doctors can't charge you whatever they want.
Okay.
Under your retail model,
what I'm telling you is, I am telling you, major surgery is being done on a retail model in Oklahoma, and it is already working. What you're telling me is this system of Medicare and Medicare doesn't work because you, they're forcing you to do a certain amount, Yes, I don't want that. Now, you could still keep that system if you want to, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't have anything else.
Oklahoma is probably the least healthiest state in America. They refuse to take the Medicaid expansion. Okay, so if it's working for a very small group of people.
Yes, that's true. I would agree with you. So let's expand it. I agree with you. What you're saying, I'm not fighting you at all. What I'm saying is it's not the right answer. I don't want to be a hostage to a terrible system. And that's what it is. Americans aren't as healthy as they could be. You know that. We have so many, oh my God, so many doctors being sued for horrible practices. And some of the best doctors, even at the highest levels, they don't take insurance. How do you know that? Because the wealthiest people literally fly to other countries to get medical major procedures done. That's what the wealthiest people in New York City do. They literally fly to other countries, pay the flat fee, which is cheaper than it is in America. And the funny thing is, many of those things are being done, believe it or not, in East Asia right now. So it's already happening, my friend. I'm agreeing with you. The system's bad. What I'm saying is we can fix it and make it better.
I'm not saying the system's bad. I'm saying Medicare and Medicaid work. They have the lowest overhead, and they serve the poorest population really well.
Medicaid and Medicare is bankrupting New York State. It's bankrupting Illinois. I'm telling you, my friend, it is not a future. It's not the right answer. In the next 20 years from now, we're going to wind up going under as a state if Illinois doesn't go before us. And about one-third of that's going to be Medicaid, Medicare.
Okay, I got to jump in just because we're getting low on time here, and I'm flooded with feedback. So, Tony, thanks for that call.
Thanks, Tony.
And listeners, I'm very late for my only break of the hour. So we're going to take our very short break. When we come back, more of your questions. We'll talk to Larry Sharp about education, about mass school shootings. We'll answer more of your questions. So more connections next. Stay with us. I'm Megan Mack. Monday on The Next Connections, the Catholic Church is struggling with more allegations of sexual abuse and a widening scandal. Some Catholic writers have called it a civil war within the church. So how can the church heal? Will members stay throughout the storm? Our panel discusses it. That's Monday on Connections. You are listening to Connections. I'm Megan Mack, sitting in for Evan Dawson today. I'm here with Larry Sharp, the Libertarian Party candidate for governor. He is joining us on the program for the hour, answering a lot of your questions, and we'll get back to those in just a moment. But I want to address something that's garnered a lot of attention this week. Larry, you made some remarks on Joe Rogan's show recently about school shootings.
Yep.
And I want to explore your position on that. First of all, you said there's an easy solution.
Yep.
To mass school shootings, but neither major party wants to actually solve the problem, in mm-hmm. your words,
yep.
because then there wouldn't be any controversy. And you said without controversy, we wouldn't have a left versus right paradigm. So
yep.
do you really believe that Democrats and Republicans, given the choice, would choose to continue to have mass school shootings as opposed to enacting a policy that would stop them?
No, I don't think that they are actively engaged or like school shootings. No, but there's no incentive to actually do anything. That's my issue. It is not, I don't think there's any Democrat, I mean, maybe there's one, but I doubt there's any Democrat or Republican going, yay, we love school shootings. I don't think so at all. But I think they're saying, well, another controversy, whatever, move on.
You think that they're that apathetic, though?
In a way, yeah, because they don't have an answer. And they have to have, it's as long as people are fighting, the two-party system is winning. If they really wanted to solve the problem, are you telling me I'm the only guy who can figure out how to solve these problems? It's just me? Somehow, with every single thing people say, I come up with an answer. Now, you may disagree with my answer. It's possible you might. But my answer still is an answer. It's one that you could work off of and shift. Even our last caller, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't want to stay with the same system. I'm still talking about other systems. And we could tweak it and find the right one, because maybe I'm off. Maybe we need to have a hybrid model, right? Maybe Tony and I could have a hybrid model. It's possible. But what I will not do is stay hostage to the same system and keep doing the same thing. School shootings, the same thing. My idea is a very simple one. They will always go one or the other. The Democrats scream, take away all the guns. Take away all the guns. Even though the guns that they're banning weren't the ones used in the school shooting. Even though people kill without guns. Even though more people have been killed in a school attack in France with a van versus a gun. Over 80 people killed with a van. So even though those facts are there, nobody seems to care if you're a Democrat. If you're on the right, it's like, turn them into prisons. Put more guards in there. Turn all our schools to prisons. Both are the wrong answer. They're not understanding the core, the root, the humanity of this thing. And the humanity of it is, if you look at the vast majority of school shootings, not everyone, but the vast majority, even though they're murders, obviously, at their core, they are actually public suicides. If you understand that they're public suicides, you have to now deal with the core is, why do kids want to kill themselves and others? Why they decided to go out in a blaze of glory? And no one touches that. Republicans sometimes go, well, we have to worry about mental health money or funds or something. Funds for mental health isn't the issue. We have a core issue that we have children who want to die because they're unhappy. Unhappy people are the ones who kill themselves. People who see no future are the ones who kill themselves. But here's the most important piece of that. They planned this out. None of these kids randomly go, you know what, today I'm going to grab a gun and go shoot somebody. That has never happened. That's not what's happened. It's always, how do I do it? What should I do? What gun should I steal? What weapon should I use? They're always planning. And my idea is a very simple one, without changing any extra laws. Look, I'm a libertarian. I don't want heavy laws. You know that. I'm very open about that. Very simple. If you are a teacher or an administrator in school and you have a permit and you may legally carry a firearm, if you want to, you may. That's it. If you don't want to carry a firearm in school, don't. If you want to, you may. Doing that's very simple. Now, all of a sudden, the actual shooter doesn't know who's armed and who isn't. Is everyone armed? Is no one armed? Are some people armed? They don't know. If they don't know, then they can't plan. If they can't plan, the school is no longer a soft target. Now, that's only part of the problem. That will really tremendously slow down school shootings right away because they can't plan anymore. The school's no longer a soft target. But they may find other targets, as people have. People have shot up churches. People have shot up malls and theaters. So people have shot up other soft targets. So it doesn't solve the problem. It just addresses the school shooting only. We still have to work with the actual problem of people wanting to kill others.
Okay, so let's stay on teachers carrying guns for a moment. Because I think you said on Joe Rogan's show that a lot of the people that you've talked to, they say that idea makes a lot of sense. But
yes,
we've had so many people on this program, and I don't mean to use just anecdotes, but,
no, go ahead.
But large groups of people, both on this program and in this country, teachers especially have said, I do not want to be packing heat in school.
And that's, let me be very clear. At no point did I say they have to.
However,
the left getting angry and saying, he's forcing us to have guns.
No,
I'm not.
Let me clarify. You are not saying they have
at all.
To. But would you feel comfortable if you worked with a teacher who you were a little concerned, you know, what if this person gets angry and he's the type of person, he or she, where I'm nervous about this anger becoming something else? How do you address those concerns?
I don't know what the concern is.
I have
a teacher who I think will pull out my firearm and shoot me when they're angry. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Let's look at Georgia, for example. Mm-hmm. So there was a headline recently where a Georgia teacher barricaded himself in a classroom and the principal tried to come in. This teacher was doing his lesson planning. Yeah. And he fired a handgun. I think it was out a window. One student was injured. She hurt her ankle running away. So
Absolutely.
It wasn't a gun-related injury. But now he's in police custody. What if he had shot someone in the school?
So to be clear, what you're saying is, in the situation you're talking about, no one was hurt except for someone who fell down versus the idea of a mass school shooting. You know what? There's no I'm good with that. Let me be a sprained ankle. I'm fine with that. Versus 16 kids dead? Let's take sprained ankle. I'm fine with that. One guy who barricades himself into his room, which he probably would have barricaded himself in his home anyway, who probably had all kind of other issues anyway, that one guy versus school shootings, I'm good with that. The problem is people are always taking my plan and they're taking it and they are comparing it to perfection. There is no perfection. There is the status quo in what we have now. What we have now is massive school shootings. What we have now. So my option is less school shootings. I would like that. That's my option.
Do you think having more guns in a space leads to more shootings?
No. Why would I think that? There are simpler gun laws in many other states. They don't have more massive shootings than we do. Why would I think that?
I'm trying to reconcile some differences
emotions?
I'm seeing here. No, no, not at all. I'm just thinking if, let's see, how many mass school shootings are there per year? If we have guns,
I don't know.
Neither do I. I don't have the data in front of me. But if we have teachers who are permitted to carry guns and we have them in schools.
Yep.
So you don't see any concern with having teachers having guns in schools. I'm speaking for teachers that have emailed this program and saying,
worried. And I get it completely. But here's what's happening now. Two things. Number one, the odds of someone who is a licensed carrier of a firearm going out there and shooting someone illegally, pretty slim. The data's in on that one, right? Generally speaking, when people shoot each other, vast majority of the time, it is not someone who's a licensed firearm owner and going, I'm going to pull my gun out randomly and shoot somebody. That's the rarest of them. Usually it's someone who has an illegal gun or someone's committing a crime. That tends not to be that guy. So the odds are against it. But the next thing is, you know right now that when the fire alarm goes off in many schools, students think it might be a shooting. That's where we are now. And you think I'm scared because one teacher thinks maybe some guy might, maybe could? Right now, the fire alarm goes off and kids are rushing underneath the tables and the desks. We need to stop being a hostage to a terrible system. Stop letting our life live on fear. Let's end this. So again, maybe you won't have any firearms. Again, I'm saying if you want to, you may if you are licensed. All that does is make sure that a student now cannot plan to shoot up a school. That's all it does.
Well, I think the student still can plan to shoot up a school.
They won't.
But they won't because they're afraid a
That's
teacher
correct.
May.
They'll pick someplace else. That's already been happening. That's why they sometimes pick theaters or churches. Other mass shootings are always in soft targets. Mass shootings are always in soft, well, not always, but 99% of the time are in soft targets because they're easy to plan. They know, they can look at it, they can stake it out, they can see what happens. And they can set it up. Even at mass shooting in Las Vegas, the guy picked that room on purpose. He planned. He brought his weapons. He planned. These are all planned. If you can't plan, that's no longer a soft target. To be clear, this isn't the only answer. As I said before, the core is making happier kids. But if you want to stop school shootings, this is an answer. It will completely, without question, it will lessen school shootings.
Okay. We're down to our last couple of minutes. I want to make sure we have time to talk about your ideas for education, mm-hmm. too. So K through 10.
Yes.
You want to revamp the system in this state.
Completely.
You're saying we shouldn't have K through 12. We
Absolutely.
Should stop at K through 10. What does that look like?
Absolutely. And people always say, Larry, your ideas are radical. No, they're bold because this state is in a death spiral. And if you don't see that, you're not paying attention. Everyone in this state knows someone who's left. Everyone in this state knows someone who's walked away. People who are being crushed, can't get anywhere. We need bold moves, and this is one of them. The bold move is as follows. Number one, no more standardized testing until high school. Standardized testing is nothing but bad. It's an unfair way of grading teachers, an unfair way of grading schools, an unfair way of rewarding kids, and is no indication of success, and it makes the kids who do not test well feel stupid. Bad, bad, bad. That means some government funding goes away. Good. About $4 billion of government funding will go away out of a $60 billion budget. I can easily bring that back, and I'll show you how in a second. And not just that, Common Core goes away. Good. I don't care about Common Core at all. If a teacher wants to use it for a specific student, they may. Let teachers teach. I'm the only guy who says let teachers teach and then actually has a plan to let them teach, not just add administrators. When that begins to happen, administrators will be able to go away, and that's a good thing. Right now, we actually have some districts in New York State where there are more administrators than teachers. That's an embarrassment. They should go away, and they will. That's a good thing. K through 12 is an anachronism. The last 2 years of most or too many of our students is gym, study hall, video games, and smoking weed. They are not doing well at all. They're going off to college. It's 13th grade because they're not ready, and it takes 6 years to graduate. It's an embarrassment to change it. K through 10 instead, giving our kids now a degree immediately at 10th grade and five options. Prep school, trade school, directly to college, Get a job, go to work. I'm sorry, I'll start a business. Go. How do you pay for that? Here's how you pay for it. Very simple. When I was a Marine, I got out of the Marine Corps, I got the GI Bill. They gave me X amount of dollars for X amount of years. Each of the students gets $20,000 and 5 years to use it. Here's what I promise you. A bunch of schools will pop up. Prep schools, trade schools, and they're all going to cost $20,000 for 2 years because that's what the government's paying. Now, we pay right now $22,000 per student per year, which means we're saving $12,000 per student. Multiply that by 400,000 11th to 12th graders, there's your $4 billion. Made it right up.
Where can people learn more, Larry? Because we did not get to nearly half of the questions I had from you.
Because I got a lot of answers. Larry Sharp for New York Facebook page or LarrySharp.com. Remember, that's Larry Sharp with an E, and the E stands for electable.
And you will be at the Rochester Rally for a New York tomorrow at the German House. And you can find more information about that on Larry's website. I'd like to thank you for joining us again. We appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. I'll be back.
And we will invite all the candidates for this office to join us on this program if they have not been here already. My thanks to Rob Braden, our engineer, all our colleagues helping us out on phones today, Randy Gorman and others. I'm Megan Mack. Thanks so much. And have a good weekend, everybody. We will talk to you Monday.